Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm happy to be your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. And on the line today, I have Carol Hamilton. Carol, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Carol is the principal of Grace Social Sector Consulting. Did I get that mouthful right, Carol?
You did.
I have trouble with sibilance sometimes. So what is Grace Social Sector Consulting, and what do you do for nonprofits?
Yeah, I work primarily with nonprofits and associations, mostly around helping them with strategy and innovation, strategic planning, and also digging into culture, helping cultures, helping build stronger, healthier, more inclusive cultures as well.
Wow, cultural change is not an easy thing to affect, and I don't know if the current environment has made those conversations easier or more difficult. What do you think?
That's a good question. I think it just pulls to the fore that all of our assumptions about kind of what was an inclusive or what was a healthy culture, if it didn't include inclusiveness or include a sense of belonging, it really wasn't healthy. And so some of the, you know, but it is very difficult to make change. And obviously, we're seeing that at the societal level, but then even within organizations. And I say that with, you know, once you've got three people together, you're starting to create an organizational culture, and getting that to shift it is challenging, but can happen through with intention.
Yeah, exactly. I'm laughing because I've always said that you put three people together and you get politics.
Yep.
And, And I want to say, and we're completely off topic here, and I realize that, so forgive me, but I want to say that, you know, individually, it seems that people are at least willing to have those conversations related to diversity and inclusion and justice and cultural change. But organizationally, I'm hoping that trickles, you know, to the organizational level as well.
I mean, I think there is a little bit of leverage with a lot of organizations now having made statements that they might not have made in the past. That then, you know, the question then comes to, okay, so you've made this nice statement. How is that showing up in terms of who is actually in the leadership of your organization? You know, who gets promoted, whose ideas get paid attention to, all those kinds of things. So, you know, I think it's a small step, and I understand why people might be cynical or question that, but I think it is it's something that can provide a tool for leverage to ask bigger questions.
Right. When you and I first started talking about doing this episode, you mentioned something called design thinking and how it can benefit nonprofit leaders and nonprofit organizations. Can you walk me through that? And please, I don't even know where to begin on design thinking. What is design thinking?
Yeah. So it's a methodology for trying to solve or work on finding solutions for big, messy problems. And big, messy problems that have people in the middle of them, because another label for design thinking is actually called human-centered design. So it's really where you're putting people in the center of a challenge or a problem, but it's basically an approach for problem solving, and it started in the product development world, and has, you know, so the computer mouse was a product of a design thinking process, but it's now been applied widely, you know, in the service sector, in nonprofits, in terms of, you know, who are the people that you're trying to build something for, a service for? What are their needs, and how are you going to work towards helping them? And really putting their needs and taking the time to not just make assumptions about folks, but actually be in conversation, do interviews, that kind of thing. Really setting aside time for research and learning before you're jumping into brainstorming about what might we do about X, Y, or Z.
Right, right.
So it's really about putting people in the center, about having empathy for the people that you're building for, doing small bets. So trying to, you know, look for quick ways that you might test something out before you're spending a lot of money on it, and then iterating in an invention.
So putting the human in the center of the design thinking, I'm going to rephrase that, the design solving process, doesn't that lead to many subjective conclusions? I mean, if one person may not want the same design as another, like if we had, you know, the mouse ended up being something kind of universal, but how do we know someone would not have appreciated a trackball instead?
Both exist now, right? So they fit different people's needs. But so part of that is once you have some ideas, and so for example, I'm working with a group of students this summer. There's a DC has been great in going ahead and supporting their summer youth employment program, and we're doing a virtual internship for students. And a piece of that is that they're actually learning design thinking. And so we've actually spent the first half of the program just learning about the issue that they're trying to solve for, and they're looking at how the COVID-19 has had a huge impact on the tourism industry, and a number of these students are in a learning program that helps them learn about the hospitality industry, about tourism, and so they're looking at, well, what might we do? How might we, help rebuild the hospitality industry? Mm-hmm. And so we've spent the first portion just learning about that through secondary research, where they're, looking at articles, looking at different, things that they can read about the industry, facts and figures, those like kinds of things. But then they've also done a series of interviews where they've talked to people about their experience of travel, with a series of questions that have to do with that challenge. And now I've completely forgotten your question.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was a question per se, but it was like, humans are messy. It's hard to generalize a human experience for everybody, isn't it? I mean, like,
right. Thank you. So in that instance, and in any process, rather than trying to, and so often we try to find that one right answer for this, for a solution. And the thing that I really like about design thinking is it actually has you look for multiple ways that you might do something. So you might end up with five different ideas that you're testing that are possible solutions to the original challenge that you're working towards, the original problem that you're trying to solve. So rather than trying to jump to that one right answer of, okay, here's the computer mouse. And even in that case, they didn't build one. They carved one out of a piece of wood and had people play with it to see how they would use it. So you try to think then, okay, we're going to have a couple different ways that we might be able to do this, but we're not going to invest immediately in a big pilot program to test this out and spend tons and tons of money and resources to build those out. We're just going to create something as simple as possible, get it in front of people to start having that conversation, see how they react, see how this might work or that might work. And it could be something as simple as what's called a storyboard, where it's taking from the movie industry, where you basically do a bunch of drawings, and these can be super simple with stick figures and whatnot, of what an experience might be. Whatever you're creating, I've done this in a lot in learning programs for adults. What are the different steps that a person might take if they went through a program? Have that depiction, which doesn't cost hardly any money to create, and then just have a conversation with the person who a representative of the type of person who might participate in the program, and then have a bunch of questions that you ask them to start getting those subjective reactions. And then you're able to start honing in on what might really work without right. having spent a lot of money to build something full scale to even the stage of a pilot.
So it is very much a process that involves getting a lot of input, a lot of data collection through which you sift it all out and then make some decisions on on how to make the resulting experience useful to the most people at once.
Yeah. And so it sounds like, you know, it can take a lot of time and energy, but you can actually move through the process pretty quickly. You know, at the first stage, you know, you want to have talked to at least, 10 to 15 of kind of the target audience that you're looking at. But once you have that many, you probably have enough, because you're looking for inspiration rather than validation at the beginning. You're right. You know, so in terms of kind of a research, project, if you will, it's more, you're not necessarily looking to validate certain things. That comes more at the end. So you can have smaller numbers mm-hmm. to keep things moving forward.
Okay. So let's shift to the nonprofit sector then. How does design thinking help the nonprofit world? And can you tie that to examples from your own practice?
Sure. So, I mean, that's where I've pretty much exclusively used it. And I think that the reason that it works so well in the nonprofit sector is that it, you know, it is about people, and most organizations, even if they're working on a mission that may say has to do with the environment, it's still about getting people to get excited about that. So the fact that it puts people in the middle, really, in the center, really, you know, I think aligns well with the nonprofit sector. And, you know, in terms of some examples, I was working for an organization that served people who served international students who are currently in the news right now. And, you know, we did a number of different professional development programs for them. And so we used this method to look at, we had a couple different audiences that we hadn't done a great job of serving in the past. And we wanted to think about, well, what could we do for them? So we did that same process. We started out just having some interviews with these were, in this case, senior leaders in higher education. What was their experience? What was their day-to-day? What were some of the challenges that they were facing? What kept them up at night? Looked for those points of kind of pain points, and then started looking at what might be some things that this organization could offer that would make their lives easier, and that would make it, you know, solve that problem that we were trying to solve. And ultimately came up with about five different concepts, and then went and had a group. We actually did do some of it virtually. This was long before the pandemic. We did some in person and we did some virtually, where we got feedback from individuals on those different ideas, had them rank them so that then we could see kind of what was really resonating and what we could kind of let go of in terms of the design process. And with each stage of iteration, we invested more in terms of how we were building out that that next version, and then testing it again with people. So it's all about that. So we were able to do this was an organization that in the past might have had a good idea from an influential volunteer. A lot of resources get thrown behind it. If it's successful, that's great. But if it wasn't, it was kind of like, well, we just, you know, would keep moving and not worry about it. But in this case, we were able to, get feedback and have a much stronger sense of people really are interested in this before we'd really spent much money on it at all. At most, we'd spent some staff time to think through it.
Okay. So I hate to ask you to name names, but can you name names and show us how that has benefited an organization?
Well, that was the Association of International Educators. And so one of the programs that we ended up designing, they ended up doing a retreat for senior leaders in a specific part of that field. And it's now moved to another part of the field, and they've had one annually for the last 5 years. So it was an offering that's been successful and was able to serve an audience that they didn't have as much for, that was really resonating for that particular audience that now, you know, is engaged in the organization.
Got it. And I was also going to ask if that meant for better longer term incomes, depending on whatever program the nonprofit had at hand. Did they not only see bigger numbers, but better retention?
And I think for that audience, what was key was that they not only are participating them as individuals, but they also control budgets for all the people who work for them who might also be members of the organization. So there was kind of, while you might on that particular program, it was more of a break even, but if you look at it from a wider point of view of we're keeping these people engaged, it had a ripple effect for the, the organization and its revenue.
So let's bring this down to, say, a medium or maybe even a small nonprofit level. How can a medium-sized or a small nonprofit benefit from design thinking? Is it hard to get them to implement? Are they going to require a consultant? Will they need to buy any new software? Things like that.
No new software. Certainly you can hire a consultant, but there are lots of resources that are available for free on the web. IDEO is a design company in Silicon Valley that has created a whole set of resources designed specifically for nonprofits and has a whole toolkit of how to use, and you can download that for free off the internet. And I think, you know, I've seen this happen where I'm in DC and we have some meetups around design thinking, and they'll have design sprints where, you know, a nonprofit will be the client, small nonprofit, and a group of people come together and go through the whole process, maybe in a weekend, to come up with some possible solutions for them. So it doesn't have to be a huge amount of resources. But I think the key is to spend a little bit of time at the beginning digging into the issue and doing that research before immediately jumping into brainstorming and assuming that you already know enough about the people you're serving to create something that'll work for them. And then doing that testing with people at the end so that the people kind of bookending the process, I mean, there are people all the way through, but the people that you're serving are really two bookends of the process. So you're keeping their needs in mind.
Right. So it sounds like the barriers to doing actual design-centered thinking is they're not very big.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, it does take some time and intention, and it's not something that you're going to do in an hour.
Sure.
But, you know, we were able, I had teams that I worked with, none of whom this was their full-time job. It was a piece that they were doing in addition to what they were doing, and we were able to do it over the course of a couple month period and have solid new ideas for the organization by the end of that. And this was, you know, a couple hours here and then a day-long meeting there, you know, so it wasn't, over the course of that several months, it wasn't a huge commitment.
Is there anything else that we should make sure we talk about before we wrap this episode?
Sure. There's one resource that I think is particularly relevant to people in the nonprofit sector. Gene Litka from the Darden School and Business School of University of Virginia has written a book called Design Thinking for the Greater Good, Innovation in the Social Sector, that really gives you, she did a lot of research on how people in the nonprofit and public sectors have used design thinking and has some really wonderful case studies of how it's been applied.
Excellent. I may have to check that out myself, actually. Carol, it seems clear that we could write books on the topic. I mean, there's so many different ways to slice and dice the conversation, but we're running out of time. If a nonprofit or if an individual wanted to get in touch with you to learn more, how would you suggest they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to my website at gracesocialsector.com. And I do have some tools actually that have to do with design thinking. One, a storyboard template, a customer journey map template. But they can get in touch with me there, gracesocialsector.com. And love to talk to anybody about this topic, love to support projects and see how organizations can apply it in their setting.
Very cool. Thank you. Carol, this has been fascinating stuff. I hope we can get together again and talk some more about this in the future. And in the meantime, thanks for making the time to make this Snapcast episode with me today.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. We invite you to be a part of these conversations. If you have an idea for the program or would like to be a guest on a future episode, please drop us a line via our website, nonprofitsnapcast.org. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.